What a beautiful day here in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
And we're here with
Bill Gage.
Your family, you've been here a long time, right? Your dad and mom grew up here?
Yeah, my great-grandparents came here in 1910 for the first time. And my grandfather had quit the corporate world and had purchased the old tour boat company here in the 1950s. And I was born in the 60s and, you know, is a cheesehead by nature.
You kind of grew up on the water, didn't you?
I did. Just like my kids, the first thing you do when you come from the hospital is you get on a boat if you're a Gage.
Junior high and high school, you would work summers doing stuff?
If I got in trouble, I had a spliced rope. If I was on the good list, I'd be able to pump gas because you'd be able to see the girls out on the boat that way.
You went off on your own. You went away to college and you wanted to do your own thing, right?
Yeah, I did. My dad and parents, we talked about the importance of going away and having some perspective and hopefully bringing some additional value to a business if you chose to be a part of it. And I'm thankful that I was exposed to something like this. I had some great experiences working overseas and in New York and L.A. and Chicago a lot, but ultimately, kind of like one of the salmon, I had a chance to come back and I was given the opportunity and just tried to be a good steward and keep making this a great place to both live and visit.
So some of the things that you learned in your corporate foray out in the big world, did you bring that back and did that help you when you took over and started running this business?
You know, I think one of the reasons we decided not to go right into it was a program that we went to at Wharton where they talked about the SOB syndrome or son of boss. And I think it's important to have perspective, and I would say the one of the biggest things I got was being an employee of someone else and understanding that, not just being the owner.
You might have been blind and not had an appreciation for that if you never left.
I think I was better for it. You know, I came here, I was happy to take a pay cut to have a chance to be with my dad and help build something and continue to build on things that, you know, we were doing, but more importantly, a lot of our people and staff have helped nurture for, you know, we have several employees that are third-generation employees.
When did you come back and get back in the saddle? What year was that?
That was in the fall of 1999.
From 99 to today, there's been a shift, a game shift in your operation. You've grown and you've branched out and done some really cool, creative things. Tell us about the things that you brought to the plate of the family business.
You know, I think, without a doubt, being able to travel and look around, and my dad exposed me to that. As a child, we looked for steam engines to put in a boat, first in America and then in England and Germany. But as I traveled around, you know, you just try to pick up what works and what people are enjoying. And so I would say I continued to evolve the, you see it in many things in America. There's a phrase of edertainment or entertainment and the blurring of lines. I mean, look at what Johnny Morris did with Bass Pro Shops, right? I think what you have to do is make things compelling for people to enjoy. And in America, I think you either break two ways. Either something becomes a commodity or something is unique and different. And Lake Geneva is unique and different.
You provide some really cool family-based and adult-based entertainment that's very distinctive. I mean, just your mail boat is a great ride.
Well, look, I didn't create the mail boat. My job wasn't to screw it up. We've continued to, you know, make it fun. My grandfather was, you know, in the 70s, just at that cutting edge of having the first mail girl, right, you know.
Talk to us for just a quick moment about the mail jumpers. That's a great story.
That is a unique job. And so going along on a 80-foot-long, 150-passenger boat and people kind of look and see a mailbox down on the dock, wonder what's going to happen. Well, the boat doesn't stop. You jump off the boat with the mail in your hand, grab the outgoing mail, and get back on. Of course, hopefully some of your friends haven't put rubber bands around the mailbox or a little soap on the dock. But, you know, it's fun to see a little bit of theater and a little bit of things the way they used to be.
How long has your family mail boat been delivering mail on the lake?
That would be for 102 years. So, as the third generation, my job was to screw it up. So hopefully we're actually the third owners of the company, but I think we've continued to invest back in it and try to make it better each time.
I only know of one other place in America where I've been. That's the mailboat on the Rogue River in Oregon.
Yep, I've been there.
And that's it, right? That's you too?
You know, I know there are some other places where there's a very small boat, and literally it has to be delivered by water.
Yeah, I think in Alabama it seems that there's one down there. Yeah.
I feel like there might be one in Winnipesaukee, too. I don't know. I probably, with you guys from NPR, there might be a sound of a loon coming along and someone flapping in the water. That would be great. You know, these are things that I think, I've said before, I think people hearken back to an era when things are slower. And with the, you know, with our smartphones and the way things happen so quickly, it's kind of nice to think back to a day when people used to write a letter. And I find people are just shocked when they get a thank you letter or a note from me. I think it's important to remember that. And I would like to believe that over time, we'll all keep a little bit of that humanity.
Tell us a little bit more about what you offer on the water for somebody that lives here or coming to visit. It's not just the mailboat.
No. You know, Lake Geneva has a very unique, certainly fits Wisconsin, a progressive state. We have probably some of the most expensive lakefront property in the country, yet everyone has to leave a 3-foot-wide access path. So if you're not on our boat, you can walk between different homes or around to different communities. Our marina, our pier business, our restaurant right on the water, I think provide a very, very important access point for people to enjoy the lake for those who don't live on the water. So you can have a drink, you can have a meal, and you can feel like you've got your own little club, even if you don't belong to a club.
You're the one that came up with the idea of doing the Pier 290 restaurant, right?
Generally, but, you know, it's a family, it's a collective idea. I can't take all the credit for it. Different ideas filter their way through. And
the buck stops with you,
well,
right?
Some crazy guy had to do something, but I had a lot of partners and a lot of help along the way. So.
And when did you make the shift? You said this was like a marine repair facility right here.
Right. There have been, this is the winter harbor for the tour boats. They come down here because it's a safe place from ice and things like that in the wintertime. I mean, we had the welding shop here and, you know, there was hard industrial things going on here. And we just felt like it was time to take that next step, right? I mean, something that works before doesn't always continue to work going forward. It's a unique way for visitors, residents or near residents to have access to the water. And something needed to be done. And I sort of feel like people who are part of a community have an obligation. So with our boats, we try to make them beautiful. I believe people that put up buildings have an obligation to try to make them smart because they last and they're a part of the texture of a place. And having access to the water is a very unique thing. And I think providing that was a part of what I felt necessary and our family did.
Tell us a little bit for a moment some of your old classic historic boats that you have in addition to the mailboat.
Yeah, so we have three boats from the late 1800s, 1899, 1898. These were built as sort of old lake steamers. That was the way how you got to your house back then, right? I mean, they didn't have
it was the highway.
That was the highway, right? We didn't even have a good road system until the 1920s. So the train would come and, you know, it would take you there. Fortunately, some of those boats were made with steel hulls, and while we've had to rebuild even those, all of the wood hulls have not survived. So we've been good stewards of those and tried to take care of those so you can enjoy the lake in different ways.
In your family, you've done marine boat sales, right, and repairs. Do you still do that?
Yeah. You know, we come full circle on that. When the lake was developing in the 50s and 60s and 70s with, I'll call it, recreational boating, we sold a lot of different brands of boats, and my dad got out of that in the 1980s when short-term interest rates were, you know, 20%. And we come back full circle, and we sell some of the greatest brands, Chris-Craft, you know, Boston Whaler, Mastercraft, Monterey, Bennington, and wood boats. So we have our own brand of wood boat.
Really? Wow. Where are they manufactured?
Well, right in the dining room here originally, and we had a partner over in Michigan that we worked with, too, but my dad found and grandfather found John Hacker, who was probably the dean of American boat design. And he had lost his company in the Depression, and in the 1950s, we couldn't get the Chris-Craft dealership then. So my grandfather reached out to him, and he was trying to scrape a couple of nickels together to make a dime, and John Hacker agreed to waive the design fees, practically, if we would put his name on the boat. So it became a Gage Hacker, which for us was like getting Porsche.
And is that now a classic? Is that a coveted boat to own?
It, you know, it's one of the I believe the stalwarts of the area here. We rebuilt some of the new ones that really took them to a completely another level with our partner, the Van Dams in Michigan, and we're just happy to try to leave something that's enjoyed by all. This sculpture you can use.
Do you personally still get your hands greasy and get the sander out?
You know, it's best if I don't have sander or a lot of power equipment, to be quite honest. But cleaning toilets and watering the flowers and painting and helping put docks in or whatever the job might be, I'm more than happy to do it.
You're involved in putting docks in and taking them out, aren't you?
Yeah, we have it's an important business. I mean, in the wintertime here, you can usually drive your car or do an amazing winter sport called ice boating, because we don't get tons of snow here normally. So, the ice will typically get 2 to 3 feet thick. So all of our docks need to come back out of the water and then go back in.
In front of every home around the lake.
In front of every home around the lake. It needs to happen like clockwork. Years like this, when we had snow about a month ago, not all the docks are going to get in by Memorial Day, but, you know, 20 years ago, people wanted their piers in by the 4th of July. Now they want them all in by Memorial Day. There's just not enough weeks in the year to get them all in, but we do our very best.
That's so cool. And what are you most proud of here? If we had a day to go cruise around, where would you take me? What would you first show me?
I'd take you out on a night right like this, where you hear the birds, you can smell the water, and you might see some people just with a smile on their face enjoying the simple pleasures of the lake. And nothing, honestly, better than from our business of when out on the beach I see a mom and dad holding hands and the kids are playing on the back. And we've provided a place where people can enjoy their free time. And that at its core is someone like myself who's a host makes me happy.
Very cool. Well, I should let you go. I know you have a family function to get to. Bill Gage, what a pleasure.
Well, a pleasure talking with you. I hope you come back and visit us. You know, all of the seasons are beautiful here. The fall colors are probably second only to Vermont, where I went to school. It's absolutely lovely. And, you know, we have our Santa Cruz and Santa Claus in the holidays, which is a great fun way for families to enjoy the holidays on Lake Geneva. So thank you.
And do you have a website somebody could learn more?
Sure. It's gagemarine.com, G-A-G-E.
Bill Gage, thanks again for sharing.
Thank you.
Tom Wilmer reporting from Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Tim Schneider from Michigan, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkan Songs on NPR affiliate KUAR.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.